that's being adjusted.
Your name's on it. It's weird. I think maybe we have to. She did though.
Good evening, everyone. We will get started. I ask we all rise for the pledge to the flag.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. So clerk to call the roll.
Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Present.
Dr. Enoch.
Present.
Ms. Squiachek.
Present.
Ms. Leon.
Present.
Dr. Van Wert.
Present.
Ms. Wilhelm.
Present.
And Mr. Cologne.
Present. Thank you. So we're going to have a public hearing to start tonight. Prior to consideration of the regular agenda items, the public hearing will be to allow the DCED staff to present the city's federal 2023 Community Development Block Grant and Home Investment Partnerships Program, the funding recommendations to council. Following the hearing, the Department of Community and Economic Development will submit a proposed resolution for council's consideration that would approve the funding recommendations and submission of the city's 2023 annual action plan to HUD. This hearing is for informational purposes only tonight. There will be no votes happening after the public hearing. In connection with this public hearing, there was one communication, a March 16, 2023 memorandum from Laura Collins, our director of the Department of Community and Economic Development, and that was read into the record at the March 21, 2023 meeting. So I'm going to call the public hearing to order. I will recognize a representative from the administration to start the presentation. Sir, if you don't mind just identifying yourself for those who may not be familiar with you.
Sure. My name is Robert Vidoni. I'm the Department of Community and Economic Development, Housing and Community Development Administrator. So I'm the CDBG and Home Administrator.
Thank you, Mr. Vidoni.
Get started?
Sure.
Okay. Well, we're here today to go over our 2023 CDBG and Home funding recommendations. This is part of our action plan process. So I'm not going to read through the acronyms in the presentation other than saying when you hear grantee, it means the city of Bethlehem. So compared to our 2023 allocations, compared to our 2022 allocations, our CDBG went up 1.8% and our home went up 5.7%. Just for anybody who doesn't know, CDBG means Community Development Block Grant, and home is the Home Investment Partnerships Program. So our CDBG allocation in 2023 is $1,416,201. Our home allocation is $455,213. So the Federal Community Development Block Grant Program provides annual formula grants to fund projects that meet certain national funding objectives. These are benefiting low and moderate income populations, preventing or eliminating slums or blight, and addressing urgent community needs. CDBG funding supports community development activities directed at revitalizing neighborhoods, economic development, and improving facilities and services. Grantees develop their own program and priorities during a five-year planning cycle. Today's hearing is part of that planning process. So, a summary of the HOME program. The Home Investment Partnerships Program was established in 1990. It's meant to assist low-income households. Funds are awarded annually as a formula grant based on housing supply, poverty, and other factors. The program funds housing activities including direct rental and purchase assistance, and building, acquiring, and or rehabilitating affordable housing for rent or ownership. The intent of the HOME program is to increase the supply of quality affordable housing for lower income households, expanding nonprofit housing provider capacity, strengthening state and local government capacity to provide affordable housing, and leveraging private sector investments in housing. The City of Bethlehem has two home-funded programs, Home Buyer Purchase Assistance, which provides loans to help with down payment and closing costs under the Bethlehem Home Buyer Assistance Program, also called BHAP, and the Direct Buyer Purchase Subsidies for houses constructed and are rehabilitated with home funds. 2023 requests versus actual funding. 2023 for CDBG, there were 24 funding requests totaling $2,298,087. We are recommending funding of 17 of these CDBG requests with $1,416,201. And just to let you know, our maximum allocation is $1,416,200,000. This shows how many more requests we actually get than funding we have. Home, we had four funding requests totaling $455,213, and all those requests were funded. Unfunded applicants are encouraged to apply for our 2024 cycle CDBG allocations, and applications are going to be opening in the fall. That's anticipated. We are going to be publicizing that application process over social media, email, online, and other sources. Now, unfunded applicants this year should also consider applying if they're qualified for Community Recovery Fund Grant. If you want to do that, please contact the Department of Community and Economic Development. So we'll just look quickly here. This is slide 10 at the CDBG allocations for 2023. This is the pie chart. Now note the numbers following each of the sections. Those are keyed to the spreadsheet, which shows our 2021 allocations, if you're prone to looking at spreadsheets. So what you see here, administration, that's 20%. Now we're going to get to what these actual programs are very soon. Administration is paying staff salaries, consultant fees, and planning for managing the CDBG program and all the other things that go along with that. Housing represents 30%. Public services represent 15%. Public services are capped at that 15%. Public facilities are 18%. And facilities in the NERSA, and that's also known as the Northside Alive area, that represents 17% of the 2023 allocation. Next slide, 11. These are home applications by activity type. This is another pie chart. So the blue is a CHOTO set aside. Now that's a community housing development organization, which is a nonprofit partner that develops affordable housing. We have to allocate 15% of our allocation to that. The gray is city housing rehab, and that represents 31% of the allocation. Home administration, which is similar to CDBG administration, it's program management. That's a dark orange, and that's 10%, and that's set at a 10% cap. Now, affordable housing project opportunities, that's the mustard yellow, that makes up 44% of the recommended allocations. So the city's 2023 program year starts January 1st, 2023. It started and it ends on December 31st. The city doesn't anticipate receiving its 2023 funding until the summer. We don't have control over that. It has to do with the federal budgeting process. It has to do with a lot of different things that we don't have control over. So we will know that at some point. We do not know that now. So now we're just going to run through. We're on slide 13 here. 2023 funded projects. I'm going to try to go through these quickly. So we'll start with CDBG projects. So activity one, that's CDBG program administration and planning costs. That's salaries, benefits for city staff, professional fees for consultants and other third parties, planning studies, and this is all the management work that goes into targeting CDBG funds to specific city activities, managing program and monitoring. That's capped at 20%, as we said. So number two is North Penn Legal Services Lehigh Valley Fair Housing Project. That's $20,000. So this is funding for fair housing staff for North Penn. Fair housing basically refers to laws that prohibit discrimination in the sale of homes, rentals, financing, and property insurance. Activity number three, that's the Hogarth Crea Women's Center. That recommended funding is $50,000. Hogarth Crea is a nonprofit that provides long-term inpatient rehabilitation for individuals suffering from addiction. This funding would go to fund their female facility in Bethlehem. Activity number three, we jumped to four here. We're at the Bethlehem Emergency Shelter, and that's for a total of $100,000, two different types of funding. BES, as many people in this room or everybody already knows, is a shelter that provides sheltering to the homeless population during the winter. They run from November 15th to April 15th, and there is not a lot of shelter capacity, especially during that time, for individuals. So they provide food, shelter, bag breakfast, and referral services to other social services. So activity five, that's share care. Now that's assistance for elderly and disabled individuals. This provides caregiving, help with household chores, visitation, comfort animals, and respite care. And that's $10,000. Activity number six, Lehigh Valley Center for Independent Living. That's the PLACE program. We're recommending $10,000. So this provides housing counseling to city residents with disabilities and their family members living on limited income. Staff provides consumers with housing options and connects them to other social services. They also educate landlords, property managers, and realtors about renting to individuals with disabilities. The next program is New Bethany Representative Pay Program. We're recommending funding of $52,750. New Bethany's Representative Pay Program prevents homelessness and sustains self-sufficiency for low-income residents who lack the resources necessary to manage their own finances and other personal affairs. They provide fiduciary services to these individuals. They basically utilize their Social Security and they help them pay essential bills. They work with their landlords. They basically do everything to help these individuals remain housed stably and not end up in the homeless population. The next activity is the Hispanic Center for Lehigh Valley, their food pantry, and we're recommending $15,000 for that. Hispanic Center, a food pantry, provides emergency services to individuals in the South Side and others from Northampton County. In addition to providing culturally appropriate food, the food pantry helps clients overcome language barriers, which is a significant issue for people trying to utilize food and other support services. Beyond that, they refer pantry clients to a wide variety of support services. The next activity is YWCA Bethlehem. That's their Tech Girls After School STEM program. We're recommending funding at $15,000. So this is an after-school program that delivers hands-on science, technology, engineering, and math enrichment to girls 9 through 13 in the Bethlehem Area School District. Next activity is Kellen Foundation's food voucher for fresh produce and healthy food. As part of the neighborhood immersion strategy, we're recommending funding of $30,000. Kellen provides all sorts of food and educational services in schools and to the community. This particular program is, Kellen provides basically subsidies for low-cost food vouchers for fresh fruit and produce in low-resource neighborhoods in the city. So this funding supports their food voucher subsidies and other supplies. And again, this is benefiting low resource neighborhoods. The next activity is New Bethany Ministries Trinity Food Kitchen on the north side. We're recommending $25,000 in funding. So the Trinity Soup Kitchen serves people on the north side experiencing food insecurity and poverty with daily hot meals, access to services, and this is all designed to help them stabilize their lives. And again, there are significant referral services that come out of this activity. The next activity is Community Action Lehigh Valley's Bethlehem Homebuyer Assistance Program, also known as BHAP, which we mentioned before. Now, this is both funded by, assisted by HOME and CDBG. So we're recommending $20,000 of CDBG funding this year. So this program provides housing counseling in support of the city's BHAP program. The funding is for costs related to CACLV's administrative support of the city's program. The city's BHAP program provides down payment and closing cost assistance to first-time home buyers who are income qualified. The next activity is the Greater Lehigh Valley YMCA's building renovations program. We're recommending funding of $198,000. So the YMCA, as probably everybody knows, has a variety of programs they host out of their Bethlehem facilities. This funding would support rehab and renovations to improve their programming for children and some other programming. The next activity is the Boys and Girls Club of Bethlehem. Now, this is a new subrecipient this year. This is for physical improvements of their auxiliary gym. We're recommending funding of $38,000. The Boys and Girls Club is located close to the Marvine Pembroke housing. 60% of the kids utilizing this program are at or below the poverty line. They provide homework assistance, youth mentoring, recreation, physical education, social development, meals, and a host of other services. They serve meals out of the auxiliary gym, which the request is basically to help rehabilitate that area and some linked areas. The next activity, this is a city activity, and this is Friendship Park Reservation renovations in the NERSA. The NERSA is a specially HUD-designated area. It's also called Northside Alive. The city has to show that they're making substantial investments in this area. So this program, we recommended funding of $240,211. This is for the engineering and design study and construction work, including adding a splash pad and shade features, removing asphalt, and adding green space and additional work. And again, as I said, we have to show investment into this particular area. It is very important. The next activity under CDBG is, this is another city activity, and this is property acquisition assistance for building a non-congregate shelter, either building or rehabbing. This is to fund potential acquisition costs related to the acquisition of real property, to basically create a non-congregate shelter. This could fund a variety of potential costs. This activity is in the plan to provide flexibility. It's basically like it's a safety mechanism. Once you put the activity in the plan, if something just comes up, like a study, soil study, environmental studies, you never know with real estate, it helps to have this in there. And this did not come out of public service funds. It comes out of non-capped facilities funding. So we'll move on to home programs. And again, the home, this is targeted at affordable housing. So these 2023 projects, the first one is the CHOTO allocation, which we mentioned before was a community housing development organization. So CALV, I might accidentally call it CACLV, that's our only CHOTO. So we have to give them a 15% allocation. They do great work, as everybody knows, but we do have to fund a CHOTO with 15%. And that's our recommended funding of $68,282. So this would support projects such as the acquisition, rehab, or construction of affordable rental units for purchased homes and or direct financial assistance. The next program is our home program administration. As I said before, this is capped at 10%, which represents our recommendation for $45,521. And this basically pays for administration of the program, studies, third-party fees, and salaries and wages of the Community Development Bureau, the people who manage the program and manage the monitoring. The next activity is city housing rehabilitation, and this is recommended funding of $143,000. And so the city housing rehab program funds full home rehabilitation and other types of rehabilitation for owner occupants, and this is to rehabilitate or reconstruct their homes up to code standards. Final activity under the home category, this is for affordable housing project opportunities, and the recommending funding here is $198,410. So home projects are extremely complex, they're heavily regulated, they require a long lead time, and because of that, projects are accepted on a rolling basis. This line item here is to fund potential projects such as development of affordable owner housing, rental assistance programs, or housing rehabilitation programs. Home is extremely flexible on what it can support. And again, this is an important activity to have in here because sometimes these projects can take a year to get off the ground, and sometimes they fail. But again, we take rolling applications. So that was my presentation. If there are questions.
Any comments from anyone else in the administration? Mr. Verdun? Understood. We will open it up to questions and comments from council. Any questions from Mr. Verdun? Dr. Van Wert?
Could you just give me a little primer on the flow of money from CDBG and home? If I can remember correctly, these monies are given with a strict guideline that you have to spend them within the year, the program year. How have we done over the past few years at spending the monies that come in? I don't know what happens if you don't spend them, if they're returned, I think, or you just don't get funded the next year. Could you just tell us a little bit about how that works?
Well, when we do the applications, we say we would like you to be able to finish the project in 12, sometimes 18 months. Now, this can depend on the projects. Now, unlike home, CDBG is a little more flexible on how long the projects can take, but again, we want them to be able to be completed in a year. However, that doesn't always happen, and it's not always in the control of the subrecipients. So what could the consequences be? The consequences could be they don't get funded the next year, or they get funded basically deducting their remaining balance.
And have we done a good job at getting those monies out the door?
I think we're doing a good job. I think we're doing the best job we can. It's it's virtually impossible to make sure every single project is getting done in 1 year. But we try. We just introduced a new system. When subrecipients provide quarterly reports, they now have to provide a quarterly spending plan, which is really, that's helping us to collect information to monitor that in a closer fashion. And again, it forces them to think about this every quarter, and we have standardized information we're collecting to push them.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions from Ms. Brandy-Smith?
Okay, you said that we must show investment in the NERSA at Friendship Park. Could you explain that?
Sure. So the NERSA, and again, it's a neighborhood revitalization strategy area. That's a designation. You have to apply to HUD to get that designation. And it gives you certain regulatory benefits that I won't necessarily go through unless you want to hear about them. But some reporting benefits, it allows more options for certain types of programs, whether they're economic development or housing. So we have to report on what kind of investment is going into that area. And I'm talking about physical investment, also non-physical investment. So there's a very, I would say, tremendous amount of activity going on in the community, whether these are committees with stakeholders, whether these are studies related to Friendship Park. We just had a hearing at a school in the area. So long story short, we need to show physical investments and non-physical investments. HUD tracks that every year. If they do not believe we're meeting the thresholds we should be meeting, they will not renew that designation, and that would be quite unfortunate.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. I had a question. I think it's in activity one and activity, let's see, one other one, 20, where it mentions fees for consultants. And I guess I'm assuming that is fees above and beyond the fees we're paying for the consultant for affordable housing. And can you just maybe touch on what type of consulting fees would be needed with both those activities?
So, for instance, Michael Baker is one consultant, and CDBG and HOME are extremely, they're highly regulated. They're a patchwork of regulations. It's very hard sometimes to actually come up with answers. And consulting in those areas, you're also getting people that have experience. Either they were HUD, they worked for HUD, or they've worked with HUD for years and years and years, and they understand that process. Now, they also, you know, help look at eligibility, or for very large projects, they can give you second opinions. Now, again, the stakes are extremely high for these programs. If things go wrong, the city basically has to pay back the money. So, now that's sort of one area. That's technical assistance for CDBG and HOME. Larger programs, housing studies, you know, environmental studies, those kinds of things. Also, that money pays for consultants for complex environmental studies. Like if you do projects that are funded with CDBG or HOME, you always have to do these environmental studies. Sometimes those need significant expertise. There are things we don't have here, like for instance, evaluating significant contamination and other kinds of things where you need extra professional advice.
Thank you. And the only other question I have is with the Friendship Park. And I'm wondering, with the renovations, are any renovations going to be implemented that are going to be accessible for children that have physical or sensory challenges? Are we looking at having some kind of inclusive kind of, you know, accessible equipment in that park? Or can we, if we haven't already looked at that? Because I think that would be really important if we're going to be redoing the playground.
But we will be meeting any accessibility guidelines. Does anybody else? Yes, the answer to that is.
I mean, we have to meet the ADA guidelines, and you know, with respect to access to the park itself.
Ms. Collins, do you mind coming to the microphone?
Sure. Yeah, and I understand that we have to meet ADA, but I guess I'm reading more and seeing more about how some communities are having like inclusive playgrounds, and maybe this wouldn't be the one, but I would just like to put it out there. I think it would be great, especially since we have a grant writer, and I know there's a lot of grants available, recreation through the state. Like, I think that would be something if we can put it on our list to try to consider for children that need above and beyond the regular ADA. Like, they need, you know, playground equipment that is physically and accessible and sensory, you know, compatible.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. you know, the design of Friendship Park, the redesign was really driven by community engagement and a number of community meetings. I don't actually recall like that specific point coming up, but I think it's a really good one, and I think it's one that, you know, we can talk about as we're looking at other parks. I don't know if Mike, you had anything else on that, but I mean, I think it's certainly something to consider.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. I think we should. I know it's very costly, but like I said, it looks like there are a lot of grants available that, you know, we can try to go for. You know, in the future, I think that would be something that we could put on our list.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from members of council? Ms. Wallen?
With regard to the CDBG funding and seeing that we received 24 requests and we're only able to fund 17 of them, I was curious as to, for organizations who are applying for funding, is there a certain number of years in succession of which they can apply and then need to take a break, or can organizations apply every year?
We don't have a hard and fast rule, but that is taken into account. You know, if we're giving large sums every year for 3 years, that's one of the many factors that we do take into account.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else? Mr. Verdomi, just a couple questions. This is more kind of historical perspective, because you had touched on that. Our funding levels for CDBG for this allocation, it was up 1.8%, and then at home was up 5.7%. Now, as we've talked about for a couple years now with inflation and just understanding the cost of things going up and relative to that increase, we may not really be seeing a ton of increased purchasing power, or at least the recipients seeing a lot of purchasing power. What have, and you might not have this information in front of you, and I understand if you don't, but what have the funding levels historically been? So it's up 1.8% now. Is it significantly higher than it was in years past, lower than it was in years past? Or does it seem to be this incremental uptick year by year?
It's gone up and down. It's been close to $2 million actually many years ago. It's not tracking inflation, and it has, again, during the financial crisis, it has jumped. There were years where it went down significantly, but I would say the variance is usually within 10% between different years, but I would say between $1 and $2 million. And I do actually have all the figures here, but I would have to get them. I can get them out of a folder if you'd like.
That's okay right now.
It's a range.
Just for understanding. And then what impacts, just in terms of how the federal government decides Bethlehem, Pennsylvania gets this much? Can you speak to some of the factors that dictate what our allocation is?
Sure. There's a bunch of different factors which go into the formula. There's incidence of poverty. There is age of housing access. There's income characteristics of the individuals in this area. It's the relationship in a relative sense for this metropolitan area to other metropolitan areas. But I would say they're mostly demographic factors, economic factors, and those are the. And again, I can get you. I do have the factors in a folder, but those are the basics.
And the data they use, we're not providing that data, of course. These are different federal bureaus and agencies that collect this information year-round and then use that to apply to their formula and metrics?
I don't know if they definitely do not take, basically, I don't know if they take our data. However, I believe this is based on census data and other surveys that are conducted by the federal government.
Understood. So it speaks to the importance of making sure we're all participating in the census.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Mr. Verdomi. I don't have any other questions or comments. Anyone else? Thank you.
Thank you.
So we will open it up for public comment. Again, this is just to give comment on the presentation we just heard related to the CDBG and home allocation. I will go around the room. Is there anyone to the left who wants to make comment in regard to the public hearing? See none. I will turn to the wide center. Is there anyone in the center who wanted to make comment on the CDBG home allocation? And I turn to the right. Okay. The proposed resolution will be placed on our April 18th, 2023 agenda. The public hearing is adjourned. We will move on with our regular scheduled city council meeting. starting with the approval of the minutes for the March 21, 2023 council meeting. Any comments on the minutes? Minutes stand approved. Moving on to public comment on any subject not being voted on this evening with a 5-minute time limit. Just a reminder to our YouTube audience, if you want to watch live, you can scroll ahead to the live feed of the meeting. We'll start with those who signed up first, and then we'll open it up to anyone else. So our first person signed up is Mr. John Rita.
I was here exactly 1 year ago addressing graffiti in Bethlehem, and boy, that hasn't gotten any better. I know some of you call it urban art, but what it is filth, destruction, property. It's illegal, and frankly, it's embarrassing. When I have visitors coming in from out of town, it's not a pretty sight. You need to start prosecuting these people. And last year, when I said pretty much the same thing, I compared Bethlehem, I said it's turning into Portland, Oregon. And at the end of the meeting, I was viewing the end of the meeting, and some of you actually took that as a compliment. Being compared to Portland, Oregon, San Francisco, or any of these other liberal, lawless cities, believe me, it's no longer a compliment. And it seems like the more destruction that goes on in some of these liberal bastions, the more the leaders get rewarded. Gavin Newsom turned San Francisco into a cesspool. He's now the governor of California. Pete Buttigieg turned South Bend into a crime capital. He's now working in the White House. So I hope the leaders in Bethlehem aren't trying to emulate them to try to move up the ladder. Now the police, what are they supposed to do? They've been vilified by the media and the Democrats so much, no one wants to be a cop. The last police chief in Bethlehem made a comment about professional race baiter LeBron James. That was the end of him. He was forced right into retirement. And I know the police are short-handed because, like I said, who in their right mind would want to be a policeman anymore the way they're treated in this country? So what we have now is close to 25 years or more of Democrats running Bethlehem. And what do we have? We've got illegal dirt bikes rampaging through the town, four-wheelers, loud cars with tinted windows racing with pot smoke flowing out of the windows. On weekends, I can't even hear myself think outside. There's loud music coming from I don't know where. You just hear it, and you don't even know where it's coming from. But it happens every Saturday and Sunday night. And speaking of loud news and the media here, they actually ran a front page article not too long ago about church bells in South Bethlehem disturbing the peace and waking up the Lehigh students. That's what they're perpetuating. It's just an assault on Christians in this country. Our current governor prosecuted no criminals. He was busy picking on the Boy Scouts and the Catholic Church the whole time he was in, and now he's the governor. He prosecuted no hardened criminals. Music Fest. Used to love going there, but it's nothing now but a corporate money grab. Their main order of business this year, perpetuated by the media. Dr. Oz came to town and had a campaign event off the grounds Saturday morning. Later in the day, he's patronizing Music Fest, walking through. And what was their main concern? They had to issue a statement that Dr. Oz shouldn't have even been there. I guess if you're a Republican, you're not allowed to even walk through Bethlehem. Meanwhile, Susan Wilde, whose last two elections were, I won't even get into that. Susan Wilde, all the Democrats have tables set up on Main Street during Music Fest. It's all convenient liberalism. Whenever it fits your agenda, you pick on who you want to pick on. Same with the guns. So, you know, I'm a Michigan State grad. That last shooting at my alma mater, that guy should have been in jail. He had 4 gun arrests. They keep letting him out. And when these people go berserk, it's the guns' fault. It's not the guns. It's the people. Our superintendent, Joseph Roy, we pay his salary, and for some investigation, we don't even know what it is. Maybe you can get to the bottom of that, if you can get off your phone. Pit bulls should be outlawed, and I'm a dog lover. They're inherent killers. Talk to any cop, vet, doctor, or judge. 95% of dog attacks are from pit bulls, and some municipalities in this country have made them illegal. I've contacted the last 2 mayors and never heard a word about that.
Mr. Reed, I politely ask you to start to bring your remarks to a close, please.
Okay, Martin Tower, nothing brewing there until just the right deal comes for one of the former Democratic politicians on these development company boards. And the homeless shelters that you want to make homeless hotels here, you can't throw a rock in this town without seeing a help wanted sign. So why would anyone want to work? And what that gentleman proposed here, that is all well and good, and that's great. But if you propose these homeless hotels, they'll come, and that's just so you can harvest more Democrat votes. That's all that's about.
Thank you, Mr. Rita.
Thank you, and I'll be back in October, and hopefully we can all celebrate Columbus Day.
Our next speaker signed up tonight, Kim, I apologize if I may be misreading the last name, Hine? About a nuisance neighbor?
Yes.
Good evening, members of council. I'm here tonight because I'm desperate. I need help regarding my neighbor. She lives below me, blasting her music all hours of the day and night, including banging, yelling, and partying. I reached out to Empire Property Management, my state rep, local legal services, and other resources. I was directed to you, but no one will help me. Unfortunately, I don't know who actually owns my property any longer. I don't believe they even know I'm dealing with. I have called Bethlehem Police frequently over the past years, and have called the Bethlehem Police reports to support her and the citation she has. I'm getting nowhere. I'm not getting anywhere. I'm desperate for help. The Bethlehem Police support this and her citations. I believe my neighbor is a nuisance. They've directed me to you. I feel helpless. I don't want to move, nor should I have to, because I can't have a good neighbor. Please help me. I suffer from seizures, anxiety, and this is under my doctor. I'm under doctor's care, and this is all documented with a constant disturbance of loud music causing me lack of sleep. And about every night, I get bad headaches. It's affecting even my pets. It's obvious. It's not gonna stop no matter how many times she's told. I seek her eviction. Anytime you can help, that would be greatly appreciated. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, and thank you for coming out this evening. If you would stick around to the end of the meeting, speak with any of us, I invite you to stick around. We have a light agenda tonight. Our next person signed up is Marcia Fritz.
Good evening. I will be very brief. And as always, I thank council for opening and paying attention to the people who come to talk to you. My reason for being here tonight is because I'm looking for feedback from my visit 2 weeks ago. Specifically, I requested Mr. Colon communicate with the mayor about why I was removed from HARB and not appointed to HCC. So, Mr. Colon, have you had an opportunity to talk to the mayor about my situation?
Ms. Fritzell, will invite you to stick around to the end of the meeting if you want to speak one-on-one afterwards.
I would be glad to. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker signed up, Mary Jo McCool.
Good evening. My name is Mary Jo McCool, and I live at 449 Grandview Boulevard. I'm here tonight to voice my concerns regarding resident notifications, specifically regarding planning and zoning meetings. I've contacted both over several months regarding upcoming meetings and agendas. Each time I was advised to check the city's website. After checking the city's website on March 20th, I contacted zoning office regarding the April 12th meeting, as it was not on the calendar. I was advised it would be updated. I called two additional times that week. The last call was on Friday the 24th, and I was advised that due to staffing shortages, it would be added to the calendar on Monday the 27th. There are also many senior citizens who don't have access to the internet, so they're unaware of what's happening in their neighborhoods. Maybe some tax dollars can be allotted to properly notify residents by mail or more numerous public postings along streets near affected areas. Regarding the zoning hearing in February for the proposed Hanover apartments, there was only one notification posted. I only noticed it as I was walking my dog. And at that point, I practically had to get down on my hands and knees to even read it because it was so low and so small. I truly believe this is a disservice to the city residents who care about their neighborhoods and changes being proposed. I also wonder if something could be arranged so that if there is a strong neighborhood resistance to any given proposal, the planning or zoning committees could dedicate a special meeting for that project. I understand this might be looked unfavorably upon these two committees as it might require an additional meeting within any given month. However, it would truly allow all concerned citizens the chance to express their concerns. They say there is strength in numbers. Placing a highly contested proposal last on the agenda may have a limiting effect on resident turnout. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker this evening is Artie Caratola.
Marty Caratola, 813 Lawford Street, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, members of the council of all Bethlehem and wherever else cities you might be listening to on the podcast. The thing that I'm presenting to council is a subject that is very touchy in every city in the United States. The situation of landfills, situation of recycling. If we make it mandatory, I mean, how many times do you see, I mean, not that I go through people's garbage, but the thing is you can't help but noticing glass containers, jars, cans, all stuff that could be recycled, paper. If people get cited for having that stuff in their garbage rather than recycling it, we will have a more efficient city. And every city in the United States will do the same thing. We will have more a more proper city without the landfills. We might even be able to, I hate to say it, but be putting the garbage men out of business. But everything is recycled. I'm a little reluctant to say about plastics, because recycling plastic throws more pollution into the atmosphere than anything. I would say that we make it mandatory in Bethlehem, in our city, that any frozen goods are in biodegradable containers, not plastic. We don't go for plastic in Bethlehem. We make it biodegradable containers. Every city in the United States should do this. Plastic is toxic, but everything can be recycled. Okay, fruits and vegetables. What are you going to do with them? Make your own landfill. Dig up your yard, a certain section. Put it in there. On that section, hey, come summertime, whoa, you're going to have great, it's going to be very fertilized. You're going to have great vegetables or flowers or everything. Put it on the other section. Make your own landfills in your own yards. If we do that, we'll have a better city, a better country. Landfills. The people were complaining from Still City about the landfills. It looked like big plastic blobs to me that they were in. I mean, like, yeah, the rain goes down, and then of course it goes into their water and stuff. What are we going to do? We got to start somewhere. If we don't do it in Bethlehem, somebody else may do it in another city and push for what I'm talking about. We need to make it that it's got to be a law to recycle. You put it in the garbage, you get cited. End of story. Recycling is the thing. And biodegradable containers. Try to eliminate the plastic in the city of Bethlehem. Glass. Well, cans. I don't really go for canned goods myself. I'm vegan. But, canned goods, you know, it's better cans than plastic. But we got to do something about this. What are we going to do? Eventually, instead of the landfills, putting them in the ocean and kill a lot of the marine life. Or maybe we'll put them on rockets and send them out into space and explode them in space, and some other alien planet's going to get to us and say we're throwing our garbage we got to do what we need to do. And what we need to do is try to eliminate the trash, the landfills, and get people to recycle and make it a law that they must recycle, and try to make the biodegradable containers a must in the city of Bethlehem. I'm Marty Curatola. I hope you consider what I'm saying and maybe build on it. God bless you all.
Thank you, Mr. Curatola. Our next speaker is Teresa Kloiber.
Something about Grandview Boulevard. Sorry. Terry Kloiber, 345 Grandview Boulevard. And I just want to voice my opinions and my thoughts on Hanover Apartments on Hanover Avenue and Broad Street. It's where they're proposing the 4 and 5 stories. These 4 and 5 story apartments are going to be on Podium. So what I'm understanding, that's parking underneath, not underground, but just underneath that first floor. So if I'm adding correctly, Podium, 5 stories, that makes 6. So it's really 5 and 6 stories. The builder for this development called me one day to see if we wanted to talk to him, maybe discuss what they could do to make it nicer for us, you know, put flowers and bushes in, something like that. Flowers and bushes do not hide the monstrosity of buildings that he is proposing, and I said that. I told him we only wanted it to be 3 stories at the most. He said, no way, it's going to be 5 stories. Tell me how you would feel if you lived here and learned that someone was going to build a 5-story set of apartments behind your house. Would you fight for less as we're doing? We spent countless hours walking around the neighborhood letting folks know what's going on, what the builder wants to do. And we're hoping the city of Bethlehem does not allow such a massive complex to be built here. We're not rich, but we've not hesitated to spend our money on making up flyers and showing plans, putting the plans in everybody's mailbox, in everybody's door, so they can see what's going on, putting a note in their door to let them know when the zoning meeting is and when the council meeting or the planning meetings are. We're not rich, like I said, and we've not hesitated to spend our money for that. We've also hired a lawyer to help us with this fight. I'm retired and I'm on a fixed income now, so this isn't exactly how I wanted to spend my retirement money, but I'll do what I have to do to help salvage our neighborhood. My family has lived on Grandview Boulevard since I was 9 months old, and I'll be 67 this year. So I've seen our baseball fields taken away for a car dealership. I've seen our woods, which was one of our favorite places, one of our favorite playgrounds to play in the remains of Central Park. I've seen that bulldozed down for townhouses. This ugly vacant lot does serve a small purpose for us right now, though. There are people that allow their dogs to run in there, so we have a place to run them. There's nowhere else to run. Some of the neighborhood children ride their bicycles there. Take this away and we have nothing but city. The neighborhood kids are already playing in the streets because there's nowhere else to play. Cars are parked on the sidewalks because there's not enough street parking. You can't even walk along Broad Street where it intersects with Hanover Avenue without taking a chance that there will be an out-of-control car coming or speeding around that bend onto the sidewalk. To which I ask that this high-crash intersection be fixed before occupation of these apartments if they are built. The changes that this development will bring to our neighborhood will forever change the way of life for the people of our community. We don't need a set of massive buildings towering over our homes. We don't want it, and we don't understand why we may possibly have to tolerate an out-of-town investor and developer deciding it is their right to ruin our neighborhood while we, the citizens of this community, seem to have no rights. We don't want the excessive burden of traffic and parking in our neighborhood. We're concerned that adding 317 units and potentially an additional 600 people to our neighborhood will create noise and potential disruption. Has anyone evaluated the public safety issues from this development? Will there be more crime and other impacts from that much new density? I highly doubt that if it ever comes to about 500 to 600 people living there, that they're all going to get along fabulously. It was brought to my attention about historic Bethlehem. If historic Bethlehem can push back on a builder on the south side, tell them only three stories because that's what the surrounding buildings are, then will the city of Bethlehem on the north side be able to push back on this project and limit it to two or three stories because that's all the existing homes and buildings are around here, around northwest side where we live. Actually, they're mostly only two-story homes, but we'll settle for three stories. I see absolutely no benefit to putting a five-story set of buildings as a gateway to Bethlehem, as it's been called. Bethlehem is a beautiful city, especially the historic district, especially downtown here. I love coming down here. We're not that far away from Main Street. So why on earth would you want a five-story housing project, as I think of it, strict with my thoughts, as the gateway to Bethlehem? If the city of Bethlehem approves the two zoning variances at the April 12th zoning meeting and subsequently allows the builder to go five and six stories, then I'm certainly going to feel the city of Bethlehem has let us residents down. And on that note, we respectfully ask that the city of Bethlehem do all that it can to stop this development or work with the neighbors in the community to soften or mitigate the adverse impacts of this development on the people who currently and for many years reside in this neighborhood. Which I have 7 seconds left. Thank you for your time and your consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Kluger. Our next speaker is Paul Fondle.
My name's Paul Fondle, 413 Grandview Boulevard. What I want to talk about is the traffic problems. The developer, Mr. Wagner, noted that there was no required traffic improvement necessary by PennDOT. Mrs. Wells noted that they received a traffic study and will be reviewing it with the city of Allentown for 2 weeks. There is concern about the Broad Street and Club Avenue intersection. Mr. Wagner stated that he's willing to discuss how they may be able to help with the appropriate improvements at the intersection. The intersection of Hanover Avenue, West Broad Street, and Eaton Avenue is now a high crash intersection. Recent accident was on Thursday, March 23rd, 2 p.m. I was taking a walk with my dog, my son's dog, heard the sirens, looked at the two homes across the way, and there was they weren't going there. They're up at the intersection. So I walked up there and took pictures. And then I discovered on Saturday, April 1st, there was another accident there. I did not witness that one, but I heard from some people that there was another accident. Suggestions for the improvement of this intersection as follows. Relocate the digital billboard that's in the middle of the crash, high crash intersection. Should be moved because it's a distraction to motorists. That intersection, I don't care what PennDOT says, needs something done. Possibly a roundabout, because there has been some talk about that, buying some of the land on that corner, and possibly use a roundabout, which I know from Quakertown, they put three or four of them in already, and on 222 going toward Reading, they have a bunch of them. Those are big highways, but the ones in Quakertown are small residential roads. And when the accident happened in 2016, where my neighbor had her car demolished, we sent a petition around of over 200 names. And in that petition, we recommended putting anti-skid macadam on all the roads in the intersection, putting rumble strips in the cut in the macadam on Broad Street and Hanover Avenue, similar to on 22 down by Easton, which would let the people driving understand that there's a problem up ahead. That flashing warning signs, 20 miles an hour on Broad Street and Hanover Avenue. All traffic lights and stop signs, I'm sorry, add traffic lights and stop signs on Broad Street and Grandview Boulevard, because if this project goes through, people coming out of Grandview Boulevard are having trouble now. It's going to be almost impossible to get out onto Broad Street. This will slow down traffic entering the high crash intersection. Development of the Hanover apartments with 317 apartments and 550 cars added to the intersection that is known to be a high crash area is not wise. Allentown is already planning to develop more apartments on the south end of Juanita Street, including the Banco property. And I just have some pictures I'd like to share with you.
Thank you, Mr. Clark.
That's the accident.
These are for us to keep, sir?
Yeah. And this is a pole. PPL had to move the poles away from the street. The poles used to be between the curbing and the sidewalk. They had to move them on the other side of the sidewalk. They're still getting hit. That's the, you can see where even there's car tracks where they come up over the curb. And one of the things I wanted to recommend is in Hanover Township. When you have a speed limit sign, on top of that, they have the speed you're going, and that would add to the part of letting people know what's going on. And again, here's the, and on Catasauqua Road, that's where they have the non-skid macadam. That was done by the township. And this is one look up Juanita Street now, when visitors come to see the people. And that's just going to be a bigger problem.
Thank you, Mr.
Where they're going to park.
I'll make sure these are shared with everyone. Thank you, Mr. Fondle. That concludes who signed up tonight, so I'll go around the room as we do. Again, this is any subject not being voted on by council this evening. I'll start to the left. Sir.
Alex Hirsch, 738 Center Street. I had a literary masterpiece written out here. My wife felt that I might look foolish performing it. So although I assured her that ship has already sailed, she is always much wiser than I am in these matters, so I'm going to skip it for now. I've got it saved if I need it later on. And I'll just go to my appeal at the end. I have been a non-permittable car owner in the city for 263 days. Mayor Reynolds, I'm asking if you could please take just a moment, one time, to intervene on my behalf, reach out to the director of the parking authority with a request that I be included within the special permit that already exists. Again, that's, I don't know the proper terminology, so I apologize. I'm going to refer to it as item F of Article 534, Section 6. That's the ordinance about the residential parking. And it's, again, a special permit specifically for residents of within the city who have out-of-state vehicles. They have a mechanism already in place to issue and monitor out-of-state vehicles within the residential parking program. It seems like the perfect spot to include those of us that are not currently defined within the ordinance, but I believe are well within the intentions of it. And I'm referring to people like myself who are part-time residents of the city, but are property owners. Our residence here in the city is not a rental of any sort. It is the place where I reside when I'm here. It's in my name, everything else. So again, if you would consider doing that one time, I would greatly appreciate it. I don't know that it would be effective or not. But if there's any chance of doing that, and then I can at least check that option off. That would be wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hirsch. Is there anyone in the center who's not signed up who wants to make comment this evening? I'll start from left to right. Mr. Shire.
Bill Shire, 1890 Eaton Avenue. I'll go from most recent to the earliest again. I've learned that Lehigh students have parking permits. I'll bet they're not here year-round, and that some of them have out-of-state plates. And I won't repeat my remarks in support of Marcia Fritz again, but I do want to add on to what Mary Jo said about the community calendar. There's been a significant decrease in the information there. For example, I was on it yesterday, and this meeting wasn't even listed as occurring, which is a change. There was information for the Planning Commission, but for HCC and Zoning Hearing Board later in the month, no agenda. So, now to back up Mary Jo, that's to back up Mary Jo, but I also want to talk about the Hanover Apartments. Been doing some more thinking on that. As you may know, the developer is asking for two variances. One pertains to the length of the buildings. One of the buildings would be 250 feet long, and one would be 280 feet long, and the zoning ordinance has a limit of 150 feet. I won't comment on that because I don't understand the exact reason for the 150 feet. But the other variance that they are requesting is to eliminate the commercial. Now, the lot is zoned CL, which stands for Commercial Limited, sometimes called Neighborhood Commercial. And that's what it usually is throughout the city. It's a strip along a street, and it's supposed to be for neighborhood businesses. That's the basic idea. At least that's what was told to us on the task force for when the zoning ordinance was revised. This particular lot is over 8 acres, and it was Bennett Toyota. Why it was zoned CL is probably because it's so far from Center City. The developer is quite happy with the CL zoning because it allows for more height limits. Now, apartment buildings in the residential areas of the city, even in the densest residential areas, are limited to 3.5 stories. The neighbors would accept that. They are actually living in a RT zone, which is the most dense residential zone, where the limit is 3.5 stories. But the developer understandably likes the height limit that comes with CL, but wants to drop the C. It's an oxymoron. It's like having your cake and eat it and you get two. They want a commercial zone, but they don't want the commercial. Now, what this would come down to is what I would call a non-use variance. A use variance is when you're allowed to do something that's not permitted. This is getting permission to not doing something that's required. A commercial zone requires some commercial activity. They don't want to do that. They just want the height. And it's creating, in effect, a new kind of residential zone. Elsewhere, 3.5 stories. Here, 6 stories. That's creating a new zone, in effect. And that's the purview of the city council, you folks. You're the ones that do the zoning. And so I think that if this is goes to, if it's approved and it goes to court, I can, and I'm not a lawyer, as you know, but I am an economist. I can't see courts approving this sort of thing where the zoning hearing board would be creating new zones in the city, which, when it's not there, they're supposed to have variances. This is a non-use variance on steroids. So, by the way, I'm 10 seconds. If you've never been on Grandview Boulevard, and which I have recently for the first time, and it's one of those neighborhoods in the city of Bethlehem that are a delightful surprise. It enters off of Broad Street opposite the Erie Insurance Building. It's a boulevard in the sense that it's quite wide. It goes up the hill gradually and then stops at the top. And on either side, you have small residences, a few double homes, mostly single family homes, all different styles. There's no cookie cutter atmosphere. It's a delightful and charming neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shire. Going from left to right, is there anyone else in the center who wanted to make comment? Mr. Antalis?
Thank you, sir. Stephen Antalis, 77 Ridge. Noticed a pattern exhibited by council, which is continuing and expanding, and I find it troublesome. That involves discussing public business not in a public forum, and also passivity. Over the past number of months, I've seen a number of recommendations by the mayor to various commissions and boards pass smoothly. Well, a problem, but in the same period, 4 appointments never reached council. And what's interesting about these 4 appointments, they all involve historic commission. Why? My opinion, to
two of those appointments, which never were presented, but on the agenda involved the reappointment of the president of the Historic Commission. But the gentleman voted against ArchQuest, which probably didn't gain favor with the mayor. And of all commissions and boards, the historic commissions mostly affect development. So there's the rub, that it affects development. So it gives a clear picture of the policies of the administration, the importance between difference between development and historic conservation. Now, behind the scenes, two of those appointments to the Historic Commission never were brought up. Why? Because the mayor is getting hearsay that those candidates were probed by a high official of the administration individually to council members behind the scenes. And were pulled because they would not have passed. And that's backroom politics. The only thing is missing are cigars. Council should ask why a name is pulled, or if queried why they won't vote for or against, the proper comment would be, put it on the agenda and we'll let you know before the public. Transparency, it doesn't exist. Going way back to January 18th, the administration had on the agenda an appointment as an assistant solicitor. That same person was on the list for possible replacement for council solicitor. On the same agenda, but that active candidate was appointed assistant solicitor before the vote was taken on the council solicitor. They had to be vetted. So information was leaked to the administration from a confidential session of city council, which should be secret. But there was backroom discussions, obviously. It had to be, by the timing. And it's really pathetic, that a qualified person like Ms. Fritz has the courage to come before you and ask why she's not appointed. And most of you agree, she's probably the most qualified person in the city to hold that position. Why? Maybe historic preservation is too high on her agenda and will look not favorably on development. Because one of his candidates for historic council was known to say, this is much more important than that historic stuff. What a statement.
Mr. Antalik, I'll politely ask you.
I appreciate that. I'll take the 2 minutes that you've allowed to other people. But also, the passivity, not questioning why Ms. Fritz, only one council member, had the courage to speak up and ask about that.
So, passivity and dealing in behind the scenes in city business does not reflect well on city council.
Thank you.
I'd appreciate a change.
Thank you, Mr. Antalis. Continuing from left to right.
Pardon me, hello. My name is Lisa Ronka. I have a business on the south side of Bethlehem, East 3rd Street, for 14 years. I live on the west side for 20 years. I'd like to request part of what I speak about, and I think it was brought to my attention that maybe there's plans to have the council meetings. I try to come to what I can, but I feel that so many times, I know everybody's hands are tied, you don't decide on everything, but I feel that so many people speak of the same concerns, and I don't see much changed, and I don't think there's enough time allotted. We're all allotted 5 minutes. It's not enough to really address concerns that so many people have that are all the same. You know, excessive development happening very quickly, taking away a lot of the things that I love about the city. I always say I think I expect development and I like it, but yet at the same time, it seems so much is going so fast. Creating traffic problems, creating, you know, maybe more crime, more issues. Like somebody touched on earlier, not everybody's going to get along. Traffic's ridiculous on the south side. Thankfully, we have very loyal customers who sit in traffic forever to come to us from Allentown, Whitehall, Hellertown, down in the south, much farther north, much farther. But it would be nice to have some more a meeting with, say, local business owners, more residents that can all speak of some of these concerns together and find some ways to address it. There's talk of how do we know when these things are going on. As people said, it wasn't on agendas. Sometimes it is hard to find. I mean, we all pay our taxes. We all get a tax bill. I pay a business privilege tax, and I get a tax bill for my home for the city. So maybe just even once a year we can get some more literature on how we can be more involved, know more. I mean, you have to look at that. That's something I look at all the time. You know, the development's a concern. Building next to the building we're in, I'm fortunate that the landlord of my building takes pride in her property, is very good to us, wants to make sure we're happy, make sure we have a good, successful business, not just to benefit her, because she generally cares. You know, the neighboring building has been purchased by one of the biggest developers who's building all around us, trying to, you know, shadow us out. And if last year kept smelling something, brought it to numerous people's attention. Finally, a woman from the Arts Southside District like came down, wow, I smell that too, to find out after enough pushing and prodding that there was raw sewage leaking into the basement next to us for weeks in summer. You know, that's a health hazard in my opinion. That building's had awful water damage. You walk by, the windows are perspiring. You know, it's mold, that's also a health hazard. I have pictures again, as well as last year and just a few weeks ago, where slates bigger than my foot are smashed on the sidewalk, one in the street, so where there was it would have been a parked car. One of our customers' cars, thankfully, was 2 meters back, and there wasn't a car parked there, or there wasn't somebody pushing their child, possibly, or maybe one of my customers bringing one of their small children out with a bike, that one of those very large slates would have hit them, or that car, super dangerous. So these are properties that are being purchased, is my point. And it's a quote by, you know, I'll be totally blunt. Our previous mayor had a big stink about blight properties. Well, that's happening. And he works for one of those developers or to some entity, that same man that stated that. So that to me is not right. We're all paying taxes. We're all trying to be part of our community, better community, raise our families, be part of something and be proud of it. And we have people coming in and just, we're just giving in left and right to these people because they have more money. The levels, I'm confused, so maybe that's a loophole. 510 flats by me is 5 stories. That's residential. Is it because now, just like the parking deck across the street, there's going to be more apartments there, but again, we're going to put commercial space on the first floor? Is that this loophole where because we're going to put a few stores at the base, so now it allows us to put up as many stories for apartments. That's not right either, if that's how it's working, that they're just allowed to bypass the standard 3.5-story rule because, well, we'll just put in a few commercial place, few commercial businesses, and then we can put in as many levels and just cloud out everything. I won't be able to look across the river and see all the church steeples that were once so beautiful as well as the mountain because you just won't be able to see them. I go on and on. I guess the point, it would be nice to have, again, if we could please have a meeting, some meetings, that we can get together more with some of these same concerns and maybe make a difference a little bit or be able to address them. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll ask whoever's on the call if you could mute your phone, please. Is there anyone else in the center who wanted to make comments?
Yes.
Hi, my name's Tina Kasekis. I'm a merchant and resident at 4th and New Streets. I gave Rachel, don't start till I explain the petition.
Okay. You'll be given adequate time, ma'am. Go ahead.
Okay. I gave Rachel a petition that covers from Adams Street to Broadhead, East 4th, West 4th, from Morton Street down to 3rd Street, all of New Street. The petition, I got 60 signatures just in a 3-block area. 55 of the merchants and residents have decided that we do not want those stinking benches at the corner of 4th and Streets and 4th and Vine. On the petition, it shows the merchants' names and the location. I had them sign it like that because I wanted to protect the name of their businesses from social media. So if you're looking at the petition, that's why it's laid out like that. Okay, for instance, with the area that it covers. We're all frustrated with what is going on in the Southside Business District. We've put up with enough of the scum that has taken over our neighborhood. We're tired of being threatened, verbally abused, and sick of cleaning up after the lowlife. They're walking into businesses, yelling at customers for money, for food, passing out on the floor of the businesses. The merchants are afraid of calling the police for the two reasons. They're afraid of retaliation and being threatened, and also the police, no offense, the police aren't doing anything anyway. The same goes every day. This goes on every day in the business district. The local convenience store has called the police several times. One of these drunken drug addicts passed out on the floor of the store. The employees drug him out of the store and threw him off the side in the grass by the liquor store. It took 3 phone calls to the police to get a passed out slob sprawled out on the bench at 4th and Vine Street. I finally called 911 for an ambulance to take him to the hospital. 3 times. Another merchant called the police about one of them passed out on the bench at West 4th and New Street. The officer told the merchant, the benches are common space, okay? And he could sit there all day if he wished. Public drinking, public intoxication, never arrested. He's allowed to hang out all day, vomiting, urinating, and going to the bathroom in his pants, let's put it that way. No arrest. You do not live in the business district. You do not live in the business district. You do not work there. You don't work there. You don't shop or socialize there, neither do you. You don't know what's going on. We do, because we're the ones that are putting up with it. And you have no idea what's going on. Quick question for all of you. What would happen if a drunk person was sitting passed out on a bench on Main Street? Would the police officer tell the merchant that the benches are common space and the passed out drunk could sit there all day if he wants? Yeah, that would never happen. Not on me, not on Broad. That person would be picked up and in jail immediately. But that's not what's going on in the Southside Business District. We want the benches gone. No more benches in the business district. The South Bethlehem Business District was revitalized since the 80s. It has thrived because of the hard work and the merchants working together to keep it thriving. The merchants didn't get any NISA money. They didn't get any tax breaks. No money from the city, the state, or the federal government. They mortgaged their homes and their businesses at 16% interest rates. They love what they're doing, and they love working hard at what they're doing. They love their neighbors and their neighborhood. We worked hard to get the city of Bethlehem to do something for the Southside Business District. It's always been a struggle to get the city to do anything for the business district. Broad Street was totally redone. The Rose Garden, totally redone with the new band shell. Where's our $3 million star at 4th and New Street? We got painted garbage cans as flower pots, Christmas decorations that looked like they were bought from a thrift store. That's what the Southside Business District got.
Ms. Kazakis, I'm going to ask you to start drawing your remarks to a close, please.
Well, I'm almost done.
Please.
Okay. This is the truth, so sorry you don't like it.
Trying to be respectful.
We want the moldy, rusty, rotten, vomit, urine-stained benches removed. The merchants and residents deserve to be heard and considered with decisions made for South Bethlehem Business District. If you give $1 million of our tax dollars to your developers, you can use some of our tax dollars to remove the benches. If not, we will remove them for you. If you don't want to do it, we'll do it. All we want is a clean and safe business district. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the center who wanted to make comment who didn't have a chance to speak yet tonight? Is there anyone to the right? That concludes our first public comment. So we don't have anyone signed up for the second public comment this evening. So this would be anything being voted on the agenda tonight. Is there anyone, I'll start to the left and go around again, anyone who wants to make comment on anything council is voting on this evening? I turn to the center. I'll start with Mr. Shire.
Bill Shire again. On the, it's communication 6B, I forget what it is on the listing to be adopted. The contract with the Cedar Crest College, $25,000, study of crashes in Northampton County. I have a couple of questions about it. One is, I remember going when we went through the, well, no, this was the task force of the zoning ordinance, but we were presented with data showing the locations of crashes in the city. And this can, Center Street and Linden Street got highlighted because of the one-way traffic. But that was data that was available. The Cedar Crest would also look at the time of day. That was something that we did not hear about on the task force. And the causes of the crashes. Well, that's not hard to figure out. It's like someone said, it's a combination of distracted driving and reckless driving. And I'd like to tell you about briefly about two recent experiences of mine, which are kind of scary. One was, you've heard me talk about coming in on Union Boulevard. I get on Union Boulevard at the light at Beverly. And normally I have somebody behind me when I reach the Greek church, somebody who was at the red light. This person came out of a side street, and boy, was he close, or she. And I did something which I don't normally do, but by the way, some of you know it, I did some cab driving in the District of Columbia, so I'm a fairly experienced driver. I gunned my car a bit to create some space. He's right behind me again. And as we're passing in front of the Greek church, and there was no parking there at the time, I hear this roar of an engine on my right, right in front of me. I gave him a good toot on the horn, but I didn't contest it. And we reached 8th Avenue. When ran into some congestion, I was right behind him. We got to Monocacy Creek, I was right behind him. So and I was driving my usual speed, which is speed limit, a few miles over. So what did he gain? One car length. And he actually risked his life to do it. Because if I had decided at a precise interest moment to pull over so he could pass, we would have had one hell of a crash. And both of us might have been killed. One car length. How many seconds? The second occurrence was at a not well-designed entrance and exit from this 378 at 8th Avenue. I was coming home from the south side, Hill to Hill Bridge, intending to get off at 8th Avenue. And I checked the ramp coming up from UU Boulevard as I approached that area. Nobody. I'm just about ready to move over to exit and thinking, well, maybe I better take another look. But I didn't have to take another look. Again, a roar of an engine. This guy passes me on the right, cuts in front to get on 378. Why would he do that? He could have slowed down for a few seconds, let me exit, get on 378 behind me, which is what most people do. Again, this person was risking their life and mine to save a few seconds. So it's no mystery what's going on in this city. The $25,000 perhaps could be better spent to cast a wider net to fill the gap of 8 officers that exist now in the city of Bethlehem, And by the way, there's one good officer that was hired away from D.C., but I understand that D.C. is also short of police officers. So, I also, about this contract, and I want to talk about procurement at a later date in fuller detail in general, but I'm wondering if this was an unsolicited proposal that came in from Cedar Crest, or were they the only ones to bid, and if there were other proposals, what the criteria were to choose among them, and how many points for each, and stuff like that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Right to the second, too.
I noticed, is there anyone else in the center, Mr. Antalis, on anything being voted on tonight?
Steve Anzalek, Senator Sinridge. I'd like to follow up on Mr. Shire's comments. Looking at Resolution 10C, Cedar Crest College will be getting the grant of $25,000. Three questions. Number one, whoever is making that award, are they aware there are two major universities in the city of Bethlehem? Number two, did anyone determine whether Moravian University and Lehigh University were qualified to do the work? And the third, who is a person that appointed the award? So, I think these are valid questions. If City Council knows the answer to all three and are happy with the answers, then vote for it. But if you don't have the answer, you table it and find out whether Bethlehem universities are being shortchanged. You can wait for 2 weeks.
Thank you, Mr. Antalis. Is there anyone else in the center may comment on anything we're voting on tonight? I turn to the right. Seeing none, we'll continue on with our agenda. Old business, any old business for members of council? We'll move on to communications, communication 6A.
March 28, 2023, memorandum with an attached resolution and exhibit from Deputy Fire Chief Craig Baer, requesting the destruction of records from the fire department. Deputy Chief has reviewed the Municipal Records Retention Act, and the records listed on the exhibit fall within the categories where destruction is permitted.
A resolution will be placed on our April 18, 2023 council agenda. Communication 6B.
March 30th, 2023, memorandum with an attached resolution from Laura Collins, Director of Community and Economic Development, recommending a contract with Cedar Crest College of Allentown to analyze and synthesize Northampton County crash data to meet community needs. The amount of the contract is $25,000. The work is to be completed by September 30th, 2023. There are no renewals.
And Resolution 10C, of course, is on the agenda. Communication 6C.
March 30th, 2023, memorandum from City Solicitor John M. Spurk Jr. with an attached revised resolution and associated use permit agreement. Permittee is Christmas City Spirits and the event is Blossom Fest. Added as sub-permittees are Social Still LLC, Franklin Hill Vineyards Incorporated, Cellar Beast Winehouse LLC, Kilimanjaro Distillery LLC, the Easton Wine Project, Colony Meadery LLC, and Soaked LLC trading as Soaked Winery. Agreement is for 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. on April 22nd, 2023. Premises is the Nevin Place right of way and a Walnut Street parcel, both of which are adjacent to the Sun and Courtyard and are designated on exhibit attached to the agreement.
Resolution 10D is on the agenda. Communication 6D.
March 28, 2023, memorandum with an attached resolution from Laura Collins, Director of Community and Economic Development, recommending a contract with Herbert, Roland, and Rubik, Incorporated of King of Prussia for final design, engineering, and construction documents for Friendship Park redesign and to provide oversight during construction. Cost is not to exceed $115,000.
project is to be completed by December 31st, 2024. There are no renewals.
And Resolution 10E is on the agenda. Moving on to reports. I have no reports this evening. Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Just a couple things. One is, first of all, I want to just report. We had a successful kickoff last week for our newest sister city relationship. Ms. Santoro had put together a great event with many of our community leaders. President Colon, I know you were there as well. That kicks off our quest to set up a sister city relationship with a city in Puerto Rico. There's a community survey. We are having a follow-up community meeting. Councilman Leon was there as well. I apologize for not mentioning that in the first sentence. But it was really a fantastic day, and I think there was a lot of pride from a lot of people in the community about what that even the process is going to mean going forward. So I want to thank the members of City Council that were there. We will obviously report back as that process goes forward. There is a survey that we have been passing out that Ms. Santoro has been making sure is getting out to everywhere within the community with a school district and everything else, so we can establish not just where that city would be, but what that relationship would look like. Because we want it to be a combination of honoring our heritage and those connections between Puerto Rico and Bethlehem, but also going forward, what can it mean for our community? And that's not something that we're going to decide in City Hall, but it's going to be a collective effort with our community. Also, I want to thank everybody in City Council who was able to attend our flag raising on Friday. For trans visibility. I think it was Councilwoman Kwiatek who spoke. She had remarked about how much bigger the crowd was than last year. And it was a universally positive event. We've gotten almost nothing but positive feedback here in the city of Bethlehem about it, which is not the case everywhere. But I think that it was, there was an amazing amount of people that came up that I just started having conversations, just remarking with the current state of America in 2023 that we were able to create that space. So I want to thank everyone for the support of that. And then just two other things. I was over at the United Way celebration of caring today, which was the reason why I was a little bit late for the meeting. But they raised over $22 million, I believe it was, in their annual campaign. And one of the things that was said over and over again was that as appreciative as they are of private philanthropy and the ability of the major institutions of Lehigh Valley to raise those dollars, which get out to our nonprofits, that get out to our school district, that government support of our nonprofits is equally as important. Because if we know that it's there, that it makes it easier for them to save time in the fundraising and everything like that. And they had very complimentary things to say. I had probably 10 to 15 conversations with different people that really appreciate the support for the issues that we have been talking about in the city. They mentioned specifically that they appreciate the conversations that City Council has been having, that we put money into the budget for our community recovery fund, the conversations we're having about housing. And it was mentioned multiple times that it can't just be a private sector philanthropic effort, but it also has to be governments, local governments, state governments, and federal governments stepping up. And I just wanted to pass along those comments that the people within our nonprofit community, within the Lehigh Valley community, are noticing the fact that Bethlehem is not just passing along federal dollars, but trying to find ways to be able to spend our American Rescue Funds and be able to get dedicated funding going forward in future budgets. And the last thing I would just say is that Ms. Heller was down in Philadelphia yesterday for, I believe it was the American Planning Association. Did I get that right, Ms. Collins? It was the American Planning Association conference, and planners came from all over America. And Ms. Heller, Mr. Roble from LVIP, and Cassie Hilger from ArtsQuest told the Bethlehem story of the past 20 years, and they had to close the doors. There were 200 people into the room, and they couldn't let anybody else into the room for fire code and whatever it might be. And they were there, and they had remarked on people wanted to know how we did it. And I won't name specific cities, planning departments that were there, but they're large cities throughout America that were there. And I had talked to Becky Bradley from the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission today, and we had texted yesterday, and she had just remarked on how impressed people are with what we have been able to do as a city, in as far as redeveloping the old steel land,
as far as creating a city that people want to move to, that people want to live in. As we've said, and I'm going to say again on Thursday in the State of the City, obviously there's never been a higher demand to live in the city of Bethlehem than right now. And people throughout the country want to know that story. And, you know, Cassie and Carrie and Darlene were there presenting. And people just stayed to ask a lot of questions. And I know that we have issues that come up a lot that take a lot of our attention. But the big picture, as far as what is going on within this city as compared to what goes on in other cities in Pennsylvania and throughout America, is something that's drawing the attention of others. And I just wanted to pass that along as well. That it is a huge compliment and reflection of our city, and I thought that was something that should be mentioned in City Council as well. President Colon, that is my report. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Reynolds. We're going to move on to ordinances for final passage. We have one this evening. The clerk will read Bill 14 of 2023.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the 2023 capital budget for non-utilities. Bill number 14, 2023, is sponsored by Dr. Enix and Ms. Leone.
Any discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. It passes 7-0. There are no new ordinances this evening, so we'll continue on to resolutions. Resolution 10A.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem, in accordance with Municipal Records Manual, hereby authorizes the disposal of public records in the Office of the Police Department as set forth in Exhibit A. Resolutions are sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Leone.
Discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10B.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem, in accordance with the Municipal Records Manual, hereby authorizes the disposal of public records in the Office of the Fire Department as set forth in Exhibit A. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Leone.
Discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 7-0. The clerk will read Resolution 10C.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with Cedar Crest College for community mapping of crashes. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Leone.
I have a couple quick questions for whoever wants to take them. Ms. Collins, I appreciate it. It's three questions, Ms. Collins. One, we have noted on here that the funding source is the Comprehensive Traffic Safety Program grant. So this study is being paid for by a grant, correct?
Yeah, and the Comprehensive Traffic Safety Program grant is a PennDOT grant that we've received in the city for 20 plus years. So we're actually the recipient for Northampton County. Like, it is our responsibility to administer this grant countywide.
And that was going to be my next question. So in the narrative that speaks to that, it's to analyze data countywide.
Correct.
And then I kind of figured that. So it's taken in these numbers from Bethlehem to Wingap, east into Northampton Borough, and then a report will be distributed to all municipalities.
Correct. That's my understanding. And it is administered by the Health Bureau, just for clarification.
Understood. Thank you. And then my last question was, why Cedar Crest?
So Cedar Crest, we have worked with in the Health Bureau for a number of other projects, and they've, you know, been very excellent. They're actually right now helping facilitate our comprehensive health needs assessment, and they have some individuals over there who are proficient in GIS and have the capacity to take on this project. That's one of the reasons, the primary reasons that they were selected.
Understood. Thank you, Ms. Collins. Any other questions or comments from members of council? Dr. Van Wert?
Just quickly, can you confirm my assumption that Allentown is doing this for Lehigh County and that they're going to share that data with us so that we have whole city data?
I actually actually would have to check on that. I'm not sure if it's Allentown who administers it.
Or at least whoever
that we would get some data.
We would get the data and make it whole.
I will confirm for sure, yes.
Any other questions or comments from members of council? Ms. Leland?
Maybe we'll be specific to this, but do we know which universities in the area are... Do we know which universities in the area have like the best GIS or the best GIS programs so we can continue to partner with them going forward as we continue to like, beef up our GIS stuff? Or is Cedar Crest like the people for GIS?
What I know is that we've had a really good experience with Cedar Crest and GIS, but I can't speak confidently to each university's GIS programs, but I could certainly talk with some of our folks in IT about who they've interacted with and what opportunities there are for future partnerships.
Any other questions or comments from members of council? Ms. Ramsey-Smith?
So I just so I'm clear, so is it $25,000 totally from the grant, or does the city have to match any of the grant funds?
There's no match, so it's $25,000. And I believe that annually we receive about $60,000, so this is an additional $25,000 that we receive to do this work specifically.
Any other questions or comments from members of council? Thank you, Ms. Collins. I appreciate it. I'll ask the clerk to call the roll.
Ms. Ramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enoch?
Aye.
Ms. Wittek?
Aye.
Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Blum?
Aye. Passes 7-0. We'll read Resolution 10D.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem, the Mayor, and the Controller, and or such other city officials, as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor, are hereby authorized to execute a revised use permit agreement Christmas City Spirits for Blossom Fest. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Leon.
Discussion. We'll call the roll.
Ms. Crimson-Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Blum?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Lastly, clerk will read Resolution 10E.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with Herbert, Rowland, and Grubick Incorporated for design, engineering, and construction documents and project oversight for the redesign of Friendship Park. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Leon.
Discussion. Ms. Kwiatek?
Just following up on Ms. Ramsey-Smith's comments earlier, I agree and thank you for raising the issue of accessibility and making the park as inclusive as possible. It does say here that this is for, I'm sorry, I can't even open it up, complete final design, engineering, and construction documents. So it does sound like there's still opportunity maybe to take that input and my question actually was is this the park that's going to get the Kaboom project?
No, this is separate.
That's a different.
Yeah, and I'm okay. Glad you asked the question and raised it again. In the interim, I was thinking we're not actually replacing the actual play structures at Friendship Park. So this, I think it's a really excellent point about thinking about accessibility in this particular project. Because we're keeping that play structure open in 2019.
It was fairly new, yeah.
Yes, so we're not actually looking at new equipment for this park in that respect. But yes, the contract is for final design. So we do have, from our master planning process, we do have a final master design, but it's, and I'm not gonna pretend to know all the engineering terms, it's not fully engineered. Got so it. That's what we're doing with this contract.
Okay.
And then the Kaboom project is for Fairview Park or West Side.
Okay.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Thank you, Ms. Collins. We'll call the roll.
Ms. Ramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Blum?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Thank you. Moving on to new business before we adjourn. Dr. Enix?
Yes, I have two. Bear with me here. First, the Finance Committee will meet on Tuesday, April 18th, 2023 at 6 p.m. in Town Hall.
the committee will discuss budget adjustments. And second, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated on today, April 4th, in 1968, 55 years ago, in Memphis, Tennessee. Dr. King organized peaceful protests as head of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, or SCLC. Those marches included the 1963 March on Washington. He won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1964, and at the time, he was the youngest person to have done so. He was 35. Dr. King was arrested more than 25 times. He wrote 5 books, including Strength to Love, Stride Towards Freedom, and Why We Can't Wait. King's mother, Alberta Williams King, was also assassinated by a black Hebrew Israelite 6 years after Dr. King's complicated assassination. Dr. Martin Luther King was actually born Michael Luther King, named after his father, who later changed both their names to Martin Luther after an educational tour of Germany. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Enix. Any other new business from members of council? I will just briefly mention before we adjourn, because I'm listening to some of the comments, I do remind everyone that you can reach out to our city clerk's office and ask to speak. A member of council will give you a call at any time. You don't have to wait for the first and third Tuesday of every month. All of our emails are listed on the city website. I will speak confidently for all of my colleagues on council that we try to be responsive to everyone. I've been in some of your homes that are here because you've invited me to speak with you, and many have emailed, and I try to respond to all. And again, that's not unique to me being here in the center seat on council. I will speak to our city clerk about how the website, at least on the council end, is managed, and other broader conversations. And then we also, through mail, as many may be aware, the city, not council, but the city, distributes our newsletter twice a year to, I believe, every mailing address within the city of Bethlehem. And we try putting information from council about what boards we appoint people to on this end of the room and things like that. So we do invite people, if you have something pressing you want to talk about, or you want more than 5 minutes, because I do try to be respectful and lenient to a degree with everyone's time, by all means, reach out to Mr. Miller here, our city clerk, or email any of us anytime you'd like to have a conversation, an actual conversation, more than just giving your comments to council. Get home safe, everyone. Was there anything else from members of council, Ms. Kwiatek?
Sorry, I just, really quickly, I wanted to thank a lot of folks who came out today, raised some really important issues. And one of them that Ms. Ronco spoke to was the issue of developers who buy properties and then let them sit and deteriorate. And I think that is a concern. I have that concern. Since I've been on council, there have been 2 properties in particular that I have brought to the attention of the code enforcement folks in the city, and they have, you know, gone out and cited the owners and things like that. So I would highly encourage folks to either use the My Bethlehem app, or even just, again, as Mr. Colon said, reach out and let us know when these things are happening, because we can't see every building all the time, obviously. But that is, there is a process, there is a procedure, and they are responsive when things are brought to their attention. Also, as a West Sider and someone who goes to Allentown quite a bit, I'm extremely familiar with the Grandview Avenue, the Broad, Hanover, that area, and yes, I do believe that we need to do something, we meaning in the broader sense, something needs to be done regarding the traffic situation there in terms of the safety. So I really appreciate you bringing that also to folks' attention. And that was really it in terms of the things that I wanted to mention. But again, thank you for coming out, and yes, please do reach out. Thanks.
Anything else from members of council? Get home safe, everyone. Have a happy Easter. Meeting is adjourned.
And a happy Passover.
Happy Passover. Thank you, Ms. Quiesa.